call 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. You can always email us, yours truly, Fred Wallen, sportsfred@AOL.com, sportsfred@AOL.com. And a most interesting book just came out from McFarland, Race in American Sports Essays, edited by Jim Conyers, Jr., head of the African American Studies Program at the University of Houston. And, hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I came from a very political family. My mom was very, very political when I was growing up, and she told me, and I think I found it my entire life, that race plays such an important role in our society and certainly in American sports. You got a bunch of essays in this that certainly have a lot to say, but how many essays did you have to go through to decide which ones you'd put in Race in American Sports Essays?
Well, we didn't shop this idea by several faculty. We strategically looked at senior scholars nationally who have a body of work and have been publishing in the field of race and sport, and so those were the faculty that we targeted, and we were fortunate enough that those individuals responded back positively and contributed to the volume, and then. This initiated out of a research symposium that we had held at the University of Houston on race and sport in April of 2012. So from that initial core group, we got some referrals from some of those senior faculty, and then we stretched it nationally to others as well.
Book is called Race in American Sports Essays, edited by Jim Conyers, Jr., University of Houston. You can email us at, you can call us at 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-PLAY. You can email us at sportsfred@AOL.com, sportsfred@AOL.com. It's published by McFarland. Folks, if you're into sports and you're into our society, I mean, this is a book that you might want to pick up. On the cover, you got a Washington Redskin, and I hate using the term, but the question is, why is Daniel Snyder being so tough on the nickname Redskins? Why is he not doing what I think most people believe he should do?
Well, I don't know Mr. Snyder, and I'm not familiar with what his politics is. But I think that, you know, whenever you're dealing with any type of professional team owner, their issues of priority perhaps may identify profitability. And then from that, you know, whatever tears down after profitability within their list of prioritization, they do what they do and they shuffle that list along. But it appears that, you know, to some extent, just kind of, you know, stretching the field in general, that profitability might be, you know, in their top three areas of prioritization for whatever organization that they own, and that's what they center on.
Jim Conyers, Jr., with this, do you think down the road the NFL will push his hand and force him to change the nickname?
Well, you know, if you look at some of the work that's been produced by one of the contributors, Jeremy Duru, who is a professor of law at American University, he wrote an outstanding book entitled Advancing the Ball, looking at African-American coaches hired in the NFL and the issue of retention and attrition, is that the NFL is identified to some extent as the largest business in the United States. So we're not just talking about athletic business, but it's the largest business in the United States. We have businesses, people focus on profitability and whatever else advances that cause for that corporation or that business to flourish over a period of years. Some of us who, you know, are in the working class community within this market culture, we're like kind of removed even from the kind of linguistics that go on when people are dealing at billion and trillion dollar levels. So when you ask, like, do I think, will the NFL push the person, you know, based on place, space, and time, it varies, and I don't know if we could target it because, you know, you have a business, which is the NFL, and then you have, you know, these owners who they own the team individually, but then they have shares that are distributed among, you know, minority partners.
Sports Overnight America, our phone number 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. We're discussing a brand new book by McFarland, Race in American Sports Essays, edited by Jim Conyers, Jr., head of the African American Studies Program at the University of Houston. Jackie Robinson. My dad was a Cubby fan. He was born in Chicago. My dad, like a lot of people, changed clubs the day that Jackie Robinson became a Brooklyn Dodger. But in this book, Race in American Sports Essays, it's interesting what Jackie Robinson not just did for baseball, but for the borough of Brooklyn itself and how he changed things around.
Definitely. And what he did for, American social history as well. Because, prior to him, there are no African-Americans in the major leagues. But you also see that at the same time that Jackie Robinson comes into the majors, and he's also, a product of the Negro Leagues. And we have an outstanding institution that exists. It's the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City, which is in the heart of the museum district in Kansas City. And so they have a lot of memorabilia, and they build on that history. And what you find from even just going to the Negro Baseball League Museum and then, merging this with Jackie Robinson is that it's more than just a game, because unfortunately for those underrepresented groups and the economic and the political hierarchy in this country, we've had to use athletics and entertainment and other venues to, in that sense, try to, redirect those levels of disparity that have, been continuous. So Jackie Robinson making it to the league was more than just a game, but it provided, other social outlets as well, and it extended way beyond the borough of Brooklyn. And then some of his former teammates who he played with at UCLA in football, at the same time he was breaking the barrier in baseball, they were reemerging and breaking that barrier in the NFL with playing for the Kenny Washington and Woody Lowe in playing for the LA Rams when that franchise, it was impacted on them that if LA was going to have a football franchise, that they would have had to desegregate, and they were going to have African American players on the team. So, you have Jackie Robinson moving, who's a former football player, moving into the major leagues, and then two of his, backfield mates from UCLA, they're making that same bridge and coming across, in the NFL around the same time, almost simultaneously.
I'm not a big fan of Bud Selig, and we are talking to Jim Conyers Jr., Race in American Sports Essays, the book. McFarland published it. I'm not a big fan of Bud Selig, but I do think he made a wise decision in number 42, April 15th, everybody wearing that uniform. Because I go back to some poll I read in 1997 here in the California minor league, Class A. African-American players and white players alike really didn't know who Jackie Robinson was. And some of them thought he was Frank Robinson. So this number 42 that they're all wearing April 15th for the last few years, I think Bud Selig did come up with a good idea.
Well, I think it's a good idea, but I think, it goes beyond just being a good idea. I think it's an issue of reclamation. And so it's not just for one person to remember Jackie Robinson, but if you want your league, and if you want your players to respect the game and to make a contribution to the game, they need to know a little bit more about the venue in which they participate other than, two or three years outside of themselves being senior to themselves. So, if you want players in contemporary times to respect the game, make a contribution to the game, be role models, be good stewards to pass this on, they need to know about the history of the venue in which they participate in. And so, the reclamation of 42 is one contribution, and I guess there'll be others as well, as you look at the management and the direction of professional sports.
Knowing a little bit about, let's go here. I read only 7% of Major League ball players are African American, 8% last year. How come that number's so low?
Well, there's a lot of variables that contribute to it. One is, if you look, for example, and across the country, you'll see that phys ed, art programs, music programs have been reduced in funding and cut. The other is that, as you see that, you'll also be able to identify, as we, parallel that to sports, regarding Little League sports in certain environments has been cut. And so, therefore, if parents do not have the resources or finances, or if they don't have a network to get their child in participation in a Little League baseball or basketball or football league, and there might be a drought of, elementary school sports, we're going to find that there are going to be those kind of declines. And with baseball, it's an expensive sport. You got to pay for bats, you got to pay for gloves, and those are things that the individual retains. And then the number of kids on a team is a lot less than football. It's a little bit more than basketball. And are there civic and citywide programs? When I was coming along in school, there were several, you know, citywide programs for recreation, baseball, basketball, football. By the time I got to college, many of those programs were struck. They were struck down. There was no more funding. It had drained up. So, you know, we have to look at the, you know, the infrastructures within, you know, localities. Are they placing within their budget, you know, that there's recreation and activities for both young men and women? You know, and that's across the board in soccer, baseball, basketball, football. And you'd probably see that, you know, their budgets are probably minimal, if there's even a budget at all, in many cases.
Talking to Jim Conyers, Jr., he's put together Race in American Sports Essays, some most interesting articles, essays in Race in American Sports Essays, published by McFarland. Jim, in our last couple of minutes, obviously the sports media, basically white male, it's changing, but it's still preponderantly white male, no question about that. Were they fair with Michael Vick when he first came up? Because it's a very delicate situation. This isn't before the dog fighting. I thought that, your thoughts, white guys talking about African-American quarterbacks, have they been fair historically?
Okay, so all right, so you bridge it to, you know, has the reporting, has the general reporting in America been fair about African-American quarterbacks? I think that, you know, looking at the history of it, that, you know, if I'm going to look at a reporter, because I'm an academician, is that perhaps some of their research on African-American quarterbacks has been lesser, that perhaps I would suggest that they might need to do a little bit more research on African-American quarterbacks, on the position and the viability of people taking on those roles. So I'm not going to say that, you know, I think that they slighted it, because that's an issue of intentionality. But I do think that some of their research has, you know, it's been underrepresented. And that would go the same for an African-American reporter. You know, you got to look at the position, you got to look at the history of it, and then you got to look and see how many individuals have been converted from quarterbacks to wide receivers, from quarterbacks to defensive backs. And, you know, and the quarterback is, you know, I mean, that's the profile of, you know, the franchise, whether it's Little League, whether it's high school, whether it's college or professional. The quarterback is, you know, the head. That is considered the head position. Oftentimes people may know who the quarterback on the team is, but doesn't even know the name of the head coach. So there's a concern about, you know, what that profile is in that leadership position. But that, not transcending race, that becomes a concern regarding how are people projected in the society and leading. And so I think that, you know, overall, a lot of research on African-American quarterbacks has been underrepresented. They haven't probably, and to do that, you got to study a little bit more about African-American history and culture. And not just focus on the position and the player, but study the culture and the ethnic group, the people. And then look at how that meshes in with the game and the activity. And then from there, you draw some preliminary query.
Jim Conyers, Jr., a most interesting book, Race in American Sports Essays, published by McFarland's, Amazon.com, major bookstores. Jim, thanks for appearing a whole lot right here on Sports Overnight America.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the invitation again.
Thank you. Jim Conyers, Jr., Race in American Sports, published by McFarland. Folks, it's deep, but most interesting, no question about it. You can give us a call at 1-800-878-PLAY, 1-800-878-7529. You can always email us, sportsfred@aol.com, sportsfred@aol.com. The book, again, Race in American Sports Essays, edited by James Conyers, Jr., who's head of the African American Studies Program at the University of Houston. Come back with a little bit more on Sports Overnight America right after this.